internet just shut down for a minute. I lost all connection. So sorry about that, everybody. I lost my connection completely, but I had to shut.
Is that an old program plan?
Not on my end. I've got my mic shut down. I've got the radio shut down on my side.
Oh, wait, yes. There we go. That's better. I ended up pulling the player back up. I'm like, what the hell is that noise there?
Hey, you know, I think I... let me check, man. Because I'm showing I'm live, man. Showing that I'm live, but people are saying they're not hearing it. So, okay, I guess we are back then. Hey, what do you know? We're back. You can't keep me down. I will be heard. Remember that. I will be heard. Damn computers, damn internet.
They're out to shut us down.
Well, you know, I did get, somebody in my unit did get a little visit from some Alphabet Soup guys. So, you know, and their area of concern was me. So that was, you know, that was an interesting, I guess that might have probably was interesting for him. So, hey, you know, who knows? But I know that my net just went down, and that's never really happened here before. This is the first time I've ever lost my connection. So, hey, who knows? It's just going
to
be me.
Hey, it's like the old saying goes, you know your family's dysfunctional when the FBI cuts off the power to your family picnic.
So, am I back yet? Am I back? Okay, I guess we're back then. Okay, we're good then. It's hard to tell if I'm back or not. I mean, everybody, some people were saying they couldn't hear me. Man, I'm checking my levels, man. I've got little bars running all over my voice meter there and stuff like that. So I'm going to assume that I'm back. If you guys can hear me, let me know. If not, well, then I'll just keep talking and nobody will be listening and I'll just talk to you, man. So, all right. So, we're talking about this. You know, try and set up some kind of an infrastructure, man, even if it's just you and a few other guys, you know. Step out in the community when the time is needed if things ever go south, you know, natural disaster, man-made disaster, whatever it is. Secure your front yard first, secure, and then move out from there. You know, maybe that's it. You know, maybe that's just what it's going to boil down to, you know, the fact, you know, I mean, I've used the internet. I've done some good things online. But again, you know, I've never treated the internet like a lifestyle. I used it as a tool. I got on when I needed to. I got the hell off, and I had a life. And I think that's what a lot of us forget, man, is that the internet is not a lifestyle. It's not a, you know, it's not our lives. It's just a tool. It's
well,
like the
that's,
phone.
That's the problem. I mean, I've always told my old lady years ago, you know, as much as I hate to say it, I wish there would be an EMP strike, you know, somewhere in the world that would just wipe out all electronics, because, I mean, look at how, you know, the generations have become, you know, going from the Atari to the Nintendo to the PlayStation 3s and everything like that. I mean, hell, even my 11-year-old daughter has a frickin' cell phone. You know, I mean, when we were kids, we were out running around, you know, beating our bikes into the concrete, climbing trees, this, that, or the other. Now kids are fucking, you know, plastered to the TV, with, you know, and they communicate with their thumbs. You walk around the malls. And you see kids not, you know, losing all voice communication whatsoever with one another. They text to one another, and they're like 2 feet apart from one another.
Yep. Oh, man, it's not just kids, man. I was in a bar up in Canada with some of the ex's friends and stuff, and there was 20 of us sitting at this big old table, actually several tables put together, and I'm sitting by these two other girls, and all they're doing is texting each other across the table, and they're, I don't know, a foot and a half apart from each other, and they're texting each other for 2 or 3 hours until they left together. I'm like, what the hell? And also, you know, actually, you know, you're right. You know, back before we had all these things, you know, like radio and serial, you know, programs and stuff like that, we used to come home from work and we used to talk to our neighbors outside. We used to talk to our families. We used to engage with one another on a face-to-face level. Now, You know, what do we do with each other, man? We don't even talk to each other except unless it's online, man, or we're texting to each other anymore.
And, you know, the same thing with the social networking sites like Facebook, you know, MySpace. You know, if you look back, if you look at today, you almost get shunned by people if you don't have a social networking site. You know, you meet somebody, it's like, oh, hey, are you on Facebook? Well, what if I'm not? You know, and they look at you like you just developed leprosy. Just because you're not keeping up with the times. But sorry, you know, I mean, you know, granted, I do have one, but I don't put my life out there. You know, like a lot of these people do. Stepping into the shower now. Just took a good healthy shit. Smoking a cigarette right now. Do people really need to put that much of themselves out there for everyone else in the world to know?
No, not really, you know, hell. You know, but I found myself doing that too, man. I've been spending too much time online, you know. I mean, I still get my shit done. I'm still going out there and I'm still training and stuff like that. But you know what? Over the last week and a half, I've realized, man, that honestly, I really have no reason or need to be online really anymore. I've got my unit here. I've got my friends here. I've got my family here. What the hell am I even doing spending, you know, any amount of time online other than getting my shows lined up? I don't need to be online anymore, man, unless it has to do with my work, which some of it will. You know, I'm going to be working out of my house for the largest debt collection company in the world. You know, I'm going to be involved in new business development, and I work out of my house, man. This is my office. So a lot of that's going to be online. But other than that, man, you know, I realize I really have no business really being online anymore because it serves no purpose. You know, it doesn't matter if I help people get organized or give people ideas on how to get organized elsewhere. I need to worry about my backyard here, man. I need to worry about Ottawa County. I need to worry about Oak Harbor. And, you know, that's where I'm coming to now. You know, I'm getting to the point, man, where I'm just not even going to be dealing with it online. And I tell you what, man, I bet my productivity here in my community is going to increase tenfold.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like Akano, you know, he makes a good point. You know, people applying for jobs are being asked for their Facebook accounts now. And even asking for their login and password to see if they, you know, and the reason why they're doing that is, and to see if people will actually do it, you know, give them that information and to see if they are actually hiding anything.
What the hell,
naughty
businesses,
photos, whatever the case may be, child pornography. I don't know, whatever the hell they look for. But, you know, it's become so to the point that the people are allowing violations of their private lives every day.
Hang on, man. I'm going to bring somebody else on. They said they got something lighthearted to talk to us about and something kind of funny. So maybe we'll get a good laugh out of something. I'm going to bring Sleepy on with us real quick.
All right.
See what Sleepy's got to say. He's a new host over here. Had to call. And you know what? We're going to bring on Ohio Frontiersman as well. What the hell? We'll just make a whole, we'll just get a whole, you know,
make a round table.
Little round table going on here, man. Ohio Frontiersman, we're going to add you there as well. All right, so I'm bringing on Sleepy, and I'm bringing on Ohio Frontiersman. Sleepy, you there with us?
I'm here, Randy.
OF, you there with us?
Yeah, I'm here, Randy.
How's it going, man? What are you guys up to?
Oh, not much, man. Yeah, I figured I'd call in and just kind of like wait until an opportunity presented itself.
Well, the opportunity is here, man. What do you got? What's on your mind?
Oh, no. Yeah, I'd be interested in talking about, you know, what the solutions are, you know.
All right, let's talk about it.
How we get people motivated. Well, you know, I don't want to jump in on just any old topic. I mean,
well, jump in, man. Let's get your ideas. You know, how do we get people motivated out there in our communities? How do we do this? Because I'll be honest with you, man. I've been working on trying to get this group of 50 people that I met between Port and Clinton and Fremont up here in the northwest part of Ohio. And, you know, when you talk to them over the phone and stuff like that, they're all gung-ho, gung-ho, gung-ho. But then when you actually want to get them out of their houses, man, all of a sudden, that's a little bit difficult now. You know, nobody wants to leave their homes. Nobody wants to get offline or nobody wants to get off their phone. So what are your ideas, man? How do we get people motivated?
Well, first and foremost, I like to say that, you know, there are a lot of units throughout Ohio. And most of them share the same mantra. Hey, let's get the people out there the men out there fighting age. Let's get them out, train them in the woods, run them all together as a unit, and let's try to do that, once a month or what have you. What I see is it's very difficult for, husbands and fathers and whatever to get away for 1 week in a month and, convince a wife that, hey, we're going to go run through the woods and work as a unit. What I found that to be successful, especially with the frontiersmen, is we include the entire family. So we'll have, outings where we invite, the entire family. We'll have classes that encourage the wives and the non-combatants to get together, such as canning, dehydrating, things along those lines. And, of course, we'll have outings, too, where we, train the men to work as a fighting team. And by approaching it, as a family function,
mm-hmm.
we found that we can get these people out there and get them motivated and build stronger bonds than a lot of other groups that simply, ignore the family and just want the men of fighting age.
I agree with you. The last FTX up here that we had, I took Nikki out with us. He's 9 years old. I took Sarah out. And that first day, we pretty much spent shooting at little pill bottles and stuff. And let me tell you, man, they got into it and they enjoyed it. I mean, hell. At the end, man, Sarah was plinking those little pill bottles like crazy. And Nikki had a blast out there, man. He was getting muddy and running through stuff, building fires and things like that. He was having a good old time. So, yeah. I get the time constraints, man. I mean, anymore, we're stuck in a rat race.
I think that's our number one hurdle. I mean, once we can cross the participation hurdle and get people actually, motivated to do stuff, then, all the rest is relatively easy. The problem is you schedule something and you have Joe saying, hey, I'd love to come, but my wife wants me to clean out the garage. And, you have Mark over here saying, I'd love to come, but, me and my wife haven't spent much time this weekend or this week together, and she wants to spend some time together. And when you, encourage include everybody and encourage the entire family to participate, you have kids, you have wives and everything that are motivated to go. So they're not just giving you permission or, giving you a pass so you can go run out and play with your friends, so to speak. They're like, hey, it's FTX weekend or, we got this class coming up, and they're motivated. And, it becomes, not just a training, outing, but it also becomes a social function.
True.
And that's when the kids are putting down their phones and putting away their PS3s and what have you and getting out in the field. As a matter of fact, I get my kids out in the field, and to be quite honest with you, generally they don't do that often. I have one son and two stepchildren. My son is into it up to his eyebrows. He loves everything about preparing, training, and all that. My stepkids, they kind of look at me, kind of with a suspicious look, like, is this for real? but when you include them, you get them out in the field, and you're like, okay, we're going to do some land nav, we're going to do, some mock combat locations, we're going to do, we're going to make refrigerators out in the field, we're going to make stoves, that run on the sun. That's when these people, when the kids are experienced the stuff that they've never heard of, because they're so wrapped up in their technology and their games and what have you, and it fascinates them. And, the camping aspect of it, kids love to go out camping, they love the s'mores, they love all that. And when you start exposing them to the family bonds that come about from doing family activities, what you see is the family growing closer together,
mm-hmm.
and they become more and more motivated to go up, get up and actually do something. I've seen the old texting across the kitchen table stuff. I've seen the texting from one room to another. And the more I expose them to our outings, our training functions, our discussions on history and things like that, the less of an issue the texting and all the peripherals become, and the more interested they become in dialogue with family.
Well, that is a good point. I mean, as it is, if you look at the average family's, daily rat race. race routine and lifestyle. You get up at 6 in the morning. You're out the door running by 8 or sooner. You work till 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night. You come home. You get dinner made. By the time you're done with dinner, the dishes are done. The kids are put to bed. How much time have you actually got really spent together as a family? The weekends come. Everybody's taking off in their own different directions. How much time are you spending as a family? So, you know, you're right. Part of that is up on us. You know, it's our, you know, and I've said this often, you know, you want to fix this country, start with your own home.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, you being the man, you're supposed to be not only the priest, but the protector of the home, the family. And protecting doesn't necessarily always mean, you know, grabbing a rifle and standing at the door. It also means preparing your children to be able to defend themselves, you know, later on in life. And, you know, too many fathers, you know, they give that a pass and they say, well, you know, my kids aren't interested, and they just walk away. Well, you are the father. You're the man of the house. Step up, lay down the law and say, you know what? You're going to do this. You're going to, you know, participate in it. Just give it, you know, an opportunity. And force them to go out on these outings. There have been plenty of times where, you know, the kids said, hey, I want to do this. I want to play video games. I want to, you know, do whatever. Go to the mall. And I said, no, we're going to do this. And they may be, you know, resistant at first. But once they get involved with it and everything, then they really enjoy it. And see, I don't have that issue no more. I mean, I did have it, so I can speak from experience. But once you get them involved and you're actually doing something, and not just, you know, walking outside and, say, marching, you know, back and forth across your lawn or something, then, you know, these kids really see a whole world that they haven't been exposed to most of their life.
Right.
You know, they haven't grown up like you and me. You and me go out, you know, mom would be like, hey, be back by dark. You go out, you come back, you know, by dark. But you spent the entire day out with your friends exploring and doing things that are physical. Kids
life
nowadays,
was an adventure. Life was exactly. An adventure back then, man. You never knew what kind of stuff you were going to get into.
Exactly. And, you know, I have a lot of fond memories of that. And now, because, you know, the world has changed, you got to keep, obviously, a tighter rein on the children. But because of technology and because of the conveniences of video games and everything else, they've become isolated. And they're in their own little world, and they don't want to leave the comfort zone. So you will get resistance from these people, from your kids, when you try to get them to do something. But, you know, if you stand your ground and you say, hey, you're coming out with us, and you expose them to stuff that's fun, exciting, and adventurous, you will see that their mindset will shift. And like I said, it went from before I literally had to, you know, twist arms to get people to do anything, to now they're talking about, you know, hey, you know, I need this, you know, as far as equipment goes, or I need that, or how about we go out and we do this? So, you know, it's almost come full circle here. And yeah, I think that is the key to growing your militia unit, your survival group, your prepper network, whatever it may be, is to include everybody in the family, make it fun, and like I said, just push them out there. They have to go. Don't give them an option to start with, because they'll always say no.
I know you're right there about that. You know, it's always been the father's role to be, you know, to lead the family and protect them and things like that and make sure that everything's taken care of and secure. You know, when you're given a choice, you know, I can't think of a single kid out there that would rather jump on a video game than go outside and actually have to do some work or mow the lawn or anything like that. But like you said, you know, you got to lay your foot, you got to put your foot down and say, we're doing this. There's no choice. You're going out there. I don't know when we took Nicky out there, but he had a blast. You know, we were out there, man. He's putting a fire together and things like that. We've done it once here at the house before. He went out there with just rain, so it was a little bit tougher for him, but he got the fire up and running because, you know, the wood was a little wet, but he got a fire going. He was swinging on ropes. He was jumping in the mud and water, and he was shooting a gun for the first time, or maybe the second time, but he was really shooting a gun and learned how to shoot truly for the first time that day. And by the end of it, man, he had a blast. You know, Sarah went out with us, and she had a blast, and it didn't matter that we had spent a day out there, you know, all day. We got out there early in the morning, we mustered, we went out there, we started doing our thing, and at the end of the day, everybody had a great time.
Well, I think that's the secret, you know, to getting people motivated. You just got to get past that participation level. And as I mentioned before, guys who even, you know, in their heart they know, hey, I have to go out here and be with my brothers and sisters and get organized and trained, they're still being tugged in the other direction by their family. So if you can lasso in the family and get them involved, now it becomes a family function. When they're going out and training, they're actually spending quality time with their family. So, I mean, it's a win-win.
So what about you, what about you, Black Ends? You got any input on that? Any ideas, or what's your personal experience with that? You still there, Black? I think we lost Black.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I'm here.
So what about you, man? Have you had any experience with that, man? Taking your trainings and making them more of a family affair?
Yes, we've tried that, but a lot of guys in our units have, you know, really young kids, and some wives are not exactly into what we're teaching or trying to teach, you know, because they fall into the Democratic Party type of surrounding, I should say, and don't believe in what we're doing. So it's kind of like fighting an uphill battle, you know, with the wives. This side or the other. Now, in my case, I have no issue with my wife. My wife will come out and will, you know, I feel sorry for anybody who crosses her path with a 40 in her hand. The same thing with all my kids. All my kids are trained as well. My middle child just moved up here from North Carolina to be with me. She just went through her first combatives class with us and got a workout of her lifetime. But, you know, it all depends on the family, you know, the ages of the children, because a lot of them are infants, newborns, whatever the case may be, and then you have the wife issues. So it really all depends on the family.
Well, you know, I guess I'm lucky, though. I've always had, you know, like Sarah, but I've got her support. You know, she's sitting here listening in. Hell, Sarah's listened to all my broadcasts, man. I think she's my biggest fan out there. You know, she's more than happy, man, to throw on a pair of, you know, to grab her clothes and get out there and go with us. So, you know, the other day we went out and we just wanted to get together with the guys. So we called them up and said, hey, let's go grab a pizza. So we went and grabbed a pizza. We all hung out. And then afterwards we went back and, you know, we all hung out, you know, Colonel Cross, myself, Captain Parker, Lieutenant Talbot. We were all hanging out, having a good old time. We had a big old laugh. We hung out. We had, you know, we make it more of a, I guess we, you know, again, you know, like, you know, like OF was saying, Ohio Frontiersman was saying, you know, I guess with, you know, me, I guess I'm lucky, you know, I don't have that problem. I've got that family support. You know, and Nikki's more than always ready to go out there and play in the mud and get dirty and shoot guns. I mean, hell, you can't ever get enough of that.
Yeah.
So, as far as these drawbacks then, Dan, or OF, you know, these drawbacks, man. What happens when, you know, when you got a family that's like that? You know, the wife is just not down with any of this. The kids, you know, and because of that, it's just not, you know, it's resistance.
Well, you know, I like to say, show me a man who had a wife that was on board as soon as he joined, and I'll show you a liar. The bottom line is every wife. Let me say this. Women are more logical. They like to, they're more logical, and they also like to keep the status quo.
Right.
They you say, hey, I joined the militia. They're going to be having a negative reaction to that. That's guaranteed. I mean, from a logical point of view, they're going to say, hey, listen, you know, we got our family here. That's going to interfere with our family. Maybe they don't know what's going on in the world as much as the man does, because he's been researching it. And so they look at it as like a little crazy. So, and my wife was the same way. I mean, I had to kind of like ease into it, you know, kind of like climbing into a cold pool. And after a while of exposing her what's going on in the world, you know, she finally turned to me and she's like, well, what are we doing about this? Well, you know, I have been doing stuff about this. You know, what we are doing as a family is, you know, we're preparing by stockpiling food, this, that, and the other. And the more and more she was exposed to it, the more and more open she was to do things that were pro, you know, militia. You know, stockpiling food, fitting things into the budget, you know, like equipment, things along those lines. As more time went on, I asked her, you know, why don't you come out to, you know, some of the outings? And, you know, no. Then finally, yes. And then when she goes out there and she's exposed to it, she realizes, you know, this isn't, you know, a bunch of guys playing G.I. Joe in the woods. These are a bunch of good people, friends, who do a little bit of training. We have fun around the campfire, and we have all these other activities going on. And so, you know, she came fully around and is comfortable with it and encourages it now. And then we moved into bringing the children in. Of course, my son was in long before my wife was. My son is just all for this, like I said before. My stepkids, like I said, they thought, you know, this is just really, you know, way out there. But, you know, just like the mother, the more they're exposed to it little by little, the more interest they have. And now they're at the point where, you know, they're planning things. Okay, well, next weekend, you know, we're going to be doing this. And if you have an organization that's paramilitary and all you do is, you know, get together, you know, march down the road, do, you know, live fire exercises at the range, hand-to-hand combat, and things of this sort, you're going to ostracize the entire family. They're going to stand there, and they're going to watch Dad out there doing this stuff, and they're going to have be there with folded arms and maybe texting away and saying, this sucks. But if you include, you know, topics for, you know, the beginner, intro to land nav, there's a host of topics you can cover to get kids interested, you know, things are along the lines of like Eagle Scout, you know, training.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting you brought that up. Something that we're looking at doing up in Ottawa County, or up in here in Oak Harbor anyways, this summer, is putting together a week-long, or actually it's going to be a summer-long program, but, you know, the first week is going to be a good week out there, you know, just camping and training the kids, you know, and all things that the Boy Scouts used to train, and maybe still do train in, but, you know, land navigation, water purification, building survival shelters, all kinds of stuff. You know, we're really gonna try and get these kids up here really interested in doing something else besides spending their time playing the video games all weekend. Nikki's already bugging me, man, about gear and equipment he's gonna need, and the summer's still a bit of ways away, you know. But he's already talking about, you know, he's already looking online for packs and compasses and things like that. So, you know, he's excited about it. But you're right. You know, you got to find some way to bring the kids in and get them involved in it if you're going to have them out there. Because if not, if it's just, you know, if you're not really gearing anything towards them or making it interesting towards them, they're going to sit there with their arms folded around and say, like you said, this sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, you know, kids, you know, being in their own little world with these video games and what have you, you know, they think the world's one way, and it's not until you expose them to the real world that they realize, hey, you know, there's, you know, there's things I really need to learn. For instance, my stepson, he plays Call of Duty constantly. You know, we're talking about, hey, I'll get you out, you know, do some shooting and whatnot. And he's like, oh, you know, I'm a real good marksman, this, that, and the other. And he's, you know, talking about all this, you know, Call of Duty stuff he does. I said, listen, I said, you know, an AR isn't like Call of Duty.
I said, yeah. Exactly.
And he's like, oh, well, he goes, you might be a little intimidated by me because I'm a pretty damn good marksman. I said, you know what? I'd be afraid of you if my AR worked with, you know, a PS3 controller. I might be afraid of you. But since it doesn't, I'm really not concerned. You know, I got to get you, you know, thinking along the lines of actually holding a weapon as opposed to just moving your thumbs and killing people. And he's like, well, you know, that's realistic. You know, the Call of Duty stuff is realistic, combat and everything. I said, you know, the graphics are one thing. But if you go charging up to a nest of enemy combatants and you get wasted, you don't spawn, you know, two seconds later in the back of the camp and you can run forward. I said, that's not how the world works. I said, Call of Duty is BS.
Yeah, and, you know, then there's no exertion going on. I mean, you know, you try humping out there for a little bit with all that gear on, you know, see when, you know, see if you're still all comfy, nice and comfy like they are sitting on the couch after 30 minutes.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, after you have
let's see how accurate you are then.
After you have that initial conversation with them and whatnot, and, you know, we ended up, as time went on, I picked him up in the AR and I decked it out how he wanted it decked out, you know, with the scope and everything he's comfortable with. And, you know, now he's all into it. And he has a completely different outlook on that. And if somebody would mention to him, oh, you know, I play Call of Duty. I know, you know, what to do in that type of situation. I'm sure he'd laugh at it because he sees the folly and where his world was and where it's at now.
Because now he's actually realized this is not like real life at all whatsoever. And he's
The ones I deal with that do, you know, the kids that talk about the Call of Duty and everything, I tell them straight out, okay, that's all fine and good. Life doesn't have a reset button where you get another person to play with. You know, you want to learn real-world tactics that you can play in that game and learn and understand how they work? Come on out in the woods with me. I'll teach you a 1-alpha and all your friends. That way you'll be able to learn how to use them tactics in the game as well, and you'll really screw some people over.
Hell yeah, man. Start engaging in, you know, squad movements, man, where everybody's got their, you know, their area of cover, you know, where everybody's got their area that they're keeping an eye on. You know, leapfrogging one another, things like that, man. You know, hey, you get out there and be dangerous all of a sudden. I've watched people play. They just kind of run helter-skelter all over the place and hope to God they kill more people than they get killed.
You know, and that's another thing. I mean, once you take, you know, I refer to him as kids, but my stepson is actually 22. It took a couple years to, you know, get him away from the Call of Duty and kind of laughing at the militia stuff to actually being part of it. But once you do get them out there and they're actually firing the rounds off and, you know, moving in formation, you know, doing the survival camping trips where we actually, you know, hunt something down, cook it and what have you, they really get excited about that kind of stuff. And it gives them a one-up on their friends. And the next thing you know, their friends are interested. You know, what's all the stuff you're doing here? You know, I heard you guys went out, you know, for, you know, 2 days in the woods and, you know, you killed squirrels and what have you and cooked them up. And then they start showing up. And the next thing you know, you get more and more people who just want to be part of it. And I think that's the key to, you know, increasing your militia unit. Like I said before, if you're dead set about, you know, drill and ceremony and, you know, saluting each other and everybody's an admiral and whatever the case may be, you're really going to miss out. I've seen that through the 90s. Those groups do not grow. They never do grow. You get a few diehards and that is it. We approach the whole situation differently, making everybody feel included, taking suggestions from all kinds of different family members as to what to have at different outings. And what we find is excitement and, you know, a lot of fun. And even though it's fun, you know, we're still learning things. So it's a success with socially, it's a success tactically. And, you know, like a party, every FTX has to be good, otherwise you're not coming back. And if you don't believe me, think back on the time you went to some college party and, you know, you walked in through the door and there's three guys playing D&D. I mean, you didn't come back. I mean, but if you showed up to the party and there's a lot of things going on and, you know, all this entertainment and what have you, the next time you showed up, you brought your friends. And FTX should be like that. And not just FTX, it's just, you know, small outings with your group. And you'll watch your group grow.
And that's really what I'm trying to work with here, you know, is... you know, some of these things I was talking to some of the people about was the fact that, you know, it's fine and well that we know some of this stuff, but how are we preparing our children for life after, you know, when they take up the reins of securing their freedom and being the guardians of this republic? You know, do your kids know what you know? Do they understand? Are you talking to them about any of this stuff that you talk about on a regular basis? Are you teaching them about the Constitution? Are you teaching them about our revolution that we had here in this country and why we had it and what it was for and what it created afterwards? And most of the time, and the answer is no. So even if we are capable of restoring this republic to it, you know, to what it should be, if we don't teach those kids now what they need to know in the future, well, it's just going to be gone again. You know, that's one of the problems. You know, I've, you know, trying to teach, you know, trying to teach the young kids about a lot of this stuff. This, you know, they're like, oh God, not this again. You know, I have to study in school all day. Then I got to come home and have you teach me more stuff. Are you guys back? Hello?
I'm back.
Hello?
Hi.
I keep my connection keeps dropping me for some reason, man. I keep losing everything here. I don't know what the hell's going on.
I just dropped. Sleepy either?
I'm here, sir.
All right, so, well, you know, let's hear from you a little bit, man, because we just done this little broadcast a little bit ago, Homeschooling for Dissidents, and we talked about some of the stuff that we're talking about now. Why don't we get your two cents on this? How do we get the kids involved? And, you know, you had brought up one of the problems that we had before was, you know, one of the problems with homeschooling, though, is that if your kids don't respect you as the parent and, you know, or respect the roles of God as whatever it is, homeschooling is a bad idea. So, you know, how do we incorporate all of this into our daily lives and make it a family event, you know, for the kids as well?
Well, Randy, and unfortunately for that Homeschooling for Dissidents episode, it was the one thing I thought of right after we ended was the relationship between the parents and the children being kind of the fundamental foundation for having a good homeschooling experience. But I will mention it here. Yes, obviously the children need to be obedient to the parents, and the parents, in a reciprocal manner, need to treat their children well and treat them as adults as much as humanly possible. So considering that, you know, I guess some level of equal treatment on both parties is very much incumbent. So, for example, you can't have a good homeschooling experience two very brief scenarios, but, you know, in scenario A, where the children are just bratty and they run around and they, you know, you take them to the grocery, like I mentioned on the Homeschooling for Dissidents episode, where you take your kids to the grocery store and you have like a math or economics, you know, class or whatever. Well, if the kid is flipping out or whatever and running around pulling stuff off the shelves, then obviously you can't have class. So, I mean, so being on good behavior and all that is definitely kind of key on the child's part. In a reciprocal manner, though, looking at it from the other side, even if the kid is good and is willing to work hard and is well-behaved most of the time, you know, as much as possible, whatever, you know, what if you just got a bad parent? And by bad parent, what I mean is, what if the, I don't mean abusive, although that can be a problem with certain types of situations, but I'm saying more like negligent. You know, they treat their kids as like they're a chore, like, oh, I have to go pick up the kids from school. So, you know, Johnny, get in the back of the car. That's, you know, where, that attitude where their children are like, are less worthy than pets. There's this obstacle that you just deal with. Instead of valuing them as human beings and treating them as such, I mean, for example, I mean, even with some types of families I've seen where, let's say, the father or mother, and it doesn't matter which one, will treat their spouse well, but they'll treat the children crappily, even when the children are being well-behaved, even when the children are doing their chores and doing what they're supposed to be doing and stuff like that. So it has to be a two-way street if you're going to go do the homeschooling thing. That's the only way it's going to work. Otherwise, you might as well look at other options like private schooling or something else. It really is just kind of imperative. So, bring it more focused on what you guys talked about as like, far as like FDXs or just general field training, or hell, let's go have like a family camp out over the weekend. You know, same thing. You know, you can't have like brat children running around, you know, just, you know, like taking like sharp sticks and like poking holes in the chest. Then on the flip side, you can't have like a parent acting like a tyrannical ass wife either. No, it's got to be. Oh, God, I can tell you, I mean, on a future broadcast, I can tell you some of the horror stories, you know, in my Boy Scout troops. Oh, my gosh. That was like a never-ending series of different, some of the dads just being horribly bad. And then, you know, I was trying to help out a friend of mine. Oh, God, that could go on forever. But the point is that you can have, and I've seen this too, where you can have very good experiences provided both parties are willing to do it right. So making it more focused on this particular thing, then yeah, I mean, if you are the, you know, the survivalist preppers, or you're more the militia thing, or both, then yeah, you got to like treat the children well and all that. Good, you're doing your side of it. But also consider, you know, the child side of it. You know, if they really are so badly brainwashed, or whatever the case is, that, you know, they're sniping at you or whatever, then you got to handle those issues first before you can do something as, shall we say, sophisticated or important as just going and having a camp out, much less something like teaching the marksmanship and the more, let's just say, sexy things like that. So it would be incumbent there would be a certain level of trust and respect from each party towards each other is what I'm getting at. And that is essential. Without that, I don't even bother. Really, I'm serious about that, guys.
Oh, well, I got a question for you then. You talk about, you know, really bringing the kids in and getting the, you know, making it a family event. Have you come up with any problems like that with the kids out there?
Have you come up with what?
Have you encountered any problems with kids out there like that? You know, just.
Let me clarify how we look at this. First and foremost, when we have like an FTX, we just had our first public one a week ago.
Yeah, this last weekend, I believe it was.
Yeah, and, you know, we put on their kids of competent age, and, you know, a little 15 plus in parentheses. When you have, like, an FTX and you have, you know, serious training or what have you, you don't want to deal with kids, as Sleepy mentioned, you know, that are running around poking holes in tents or whatever with sharp sticks. You know, I fully understand that, and that's not what we encourage. You know, we encourage, like, if you have an FTX and you have kids that are, you know, mature, that they're just for mature, you know, 13. I'd suggest not including them with outings and such, because it'll be too much of a distraction. But including, you know, obviously your wife, and maybe even setting up a sitter, you know, to come over and watch the kids while you guys, you know, go out and do something. That will always, always work in your favor, because if your wife and your family is included, there is basically no resistance to, you know, participating in the function. It doesn't always have to be out in the field. I mean, you know, our wives will get together, and even some of the men, I mean, and have canning parties where they're talking about, you know, the best ways of canning. Where we're building sun stoves to cook stuff simply by using the power of the sun without actually creating a fire. You know, things that we do in our backyard or on the deck or what have you, and we turn it into a social event where they bring their kids over and the younger kids can play. But, you know, the adults are sharing information, building bonds, and, you know, enhancing the strength of the unit as a whole. But, you know, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you know, if you got a toddler and you're going running through the woods with a little camouflage baby carrier, you know, a baby bouncing back and forth on your chest. You know, that's not where I'm going with it. I'm just going with, you know, include them where you can include them and where it's obviously practical to have them present.
I agree. I mean, you have to do age-appropriate things for them. I mean, I'm not going to have Nicky out there running fire team drills or anything like that. I mean, that's just not at his level. Yeah, he's not of that. I mean, he doesn't have the maturity or the discipline to handle that yet. And then, you know, he's nine. So, you know, age-appropriateness is, you know, that's relevant as well. You know, I think you brought up a really great point there, though, Dan. You know, a lot of the people out there that I've met and talked to, you know, they, you know, trying to get them away from their family, even if it's for a few hours, is difficult. So how do you overcome that obstacle? Well, you didn't get the family involved and have them all come out and have them all engage or join in or whatever it is, whether it's a training or, you know, a town meeting or whatever. You know, make it a family event, make it a family affair.
You know, I want to bring up, you know, something that's really going on. Probably took out some militia folk out there.
Well, let's take some people off, man.
First of all, when I say militia folk out there, let me be perfectly clear. According to the Ohio Revised Code 592.301, to be exact, everybody between the ages of 17 and 67 are in the militia. So I'm in the militia, Randy's in the militia, Salsa's in the militia. Even that idiot that crushed your eggs by dropping a cantaloupe at the local grocery store is in the militia. So when, you know, people say, oh, well, you're not militia, or these people aren't militia, you know, those people are friggin' idiots. So when I say the militia folks, let me clarify and say I'm referring to those who are, you know, gung-ho paramilitary style militia folks. These people think that you have to go out in the field to train in formation, to train in tactics, radio communications, so on and so forth. Why can't you do this stuff at somebody's house? Why can't you have a barbecue? And when it comes to formations, break up the old army men, lay them out on the table, demonstrate to everybody what the formations are, what everyone's role is, and everything else. Simply with, you know, tactical miniatures on a table. I mean, I'm sure, you know, a few people here have played D&D in their life. I played D&D for years. You know, I'm a way back. You know, we had miniatures. For God's sakes, you could build a little world with little miniatures. You know, from medieval, you can do it with army men and lay out tactics and explain to people how it works, and then, you know, go out in the field some other day. But you can have a cookout, do the tactics, you can do radio communications, you can do, you know, all kinds of activities simply surrounded included in the normal, you know, activities of families, you know, be it a cookout or, you know, what have you. So I think that, you know, militia, you know, guys really have to look at how they approach these situations and say, hey, maybe we're too formal with our, you know, military training. You know, maybe we don't have to be out in the field, full gear, faces painted and everything, to, you know, practice radio communications. Maybe we can do that from the living room to the deck in somebody's house. You know, maybe we can use, you know, army men to explain the concepts of reaction to ambush or doing a wedge formation or a diamond pattern or everything else. There's just so much you can do outside of actually dressing up and running through the woods. And, you know, we tried to implement that. And I really wish other groups would. And if you would, you'd make this all more social. You'd make it more inviting to the families. And you make it less militaristic. Now, I know there are plenty of people out there that will say, hey, you know, I'll die for my country and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Hey, you know, all of us will. That's what makes you a patriot. But you don't have to, you know, go out in full regalia to demonstrate, you know, your seriousness in the group. You can do it under less intimidating circumstances. And if you make it less intimidating, those who are not as militaristic as you are would be more inclined to participate.
Well, no, you,
does that make sense?
Yeah, actually, no, you brought up a good point there. I know a guy out there. His screen name is Tire Iron. And this guy's a long-time vet. Now he does security work. And he used to do a lot of discussions online about training, squad movements, things like that. And what he would do is he'd take those little plastic cartridges that you could pick up in a bag. Well, we used to get it for a bag for a buck or something like that, or 50 cents a bag. I don't know what they cost now. But he thought it was these little army men. You know, he'd take pictures of them. And then he'd go in and he'd draw their fields of fire and things like that on them and how they would move, so forth and so on, you know, really explaining that. And, I thought that was a really great idea for, just getting the basics down of what a squad movement would look like, what area each individual is covering, their line of fire, things like that. So you brought up some good ideas here as well. I mean, like you said, everything doesn't have to be out in the field in full battle rattle and stuff, tromped into the woods. You can do it inside of a house.
Yeah, of course. Whenever we do it, I just refuse to be the guy that's holding this M16 above his head. I hate that one.
What was that now?
Yeah, whenever we do it, he had the little army man out. I just refuse to be the little bench of the head that's holding this M16 above his head. no one likes that miniature.
Nobody wants to be that guy.
Hey, I'll be like, hey, I'd rather be the guy with the mind detector.
So, that's always, and I agree, that's always been one of the problems is, one, space for training is always difficult. I mean, unless you've got acreage, it's hard to really get out there. Getting out of national parks and things like that is often difficult. You've got other people out there sharing the space with you, and a lot of times, a bunch of, 20 guys tromping through the woods is going to freak them out and scare them. People have watched, Wrong Turn and Deliverance, people have watched that. I was worried driving through some of the hills in West Virginia. I was like, shit, this looks familiar, So, I get that. You brought up some really great points there. Any other ideas you have?
For me?
Yeah, anybody. I mean, Sleepy, you, anybody else. I guess it's just these two here on the call. If anybody asks, Chapman would like to get on here with us, I can bring you on through Skype. Just drop me your Skype name, or if you already have me on Skype, just let me know, and I'll bring you into this call with if you've got some 2 cents to throw in as well.
Yeah, Randy, I was kind of thinking earlier, just because, you had a rough week and whatnot, and hell, I've had a rough week too. I thought maybe a little bit of humor might be the best remedy for curing at least a little portion of the body politic. And I know this might come from an unlikely source, but, I was reading a book, the thing with, a piece of paper with ink on it that's bound with a cover,
mm-hmm.
not an e-book, okay. Okay,
I remember those things. I have a huge collection in Canada, man. I had a massive collection of books at the wall. That was just one of my collections. I've gone through so many collections of books, it's not even funny.
Right. Okay, so I think the current edition of the Boy Scout field book, and just as a quick aside, yes, the main thing is the Boy Scout handbook. That's the thing that all the Boy Scouts have to use and has their rank requirements in the back and all that. I'm not talking about that, though. This is the field book. The field book is literally what they call the advanced skills. In fact, actually, on the cover here, it says the BSA's Manual of Advanced Skills for Outdoor Travel, Adventure, and Caring for the Land. And I must say, I'm not done with it yet. I read several chapters earlier today, and I kind of like the older edition, the previous edition, better, because at least there was that step-by-step thing. They showed how to improvise your own mukluks, which is actually really cool. But what I did come across earlier today was on their hygiene chapter. And I noticed in previous, older BSA literature about, if you can't dispose of something, in an environmentally friendly way that we prescribe, then you have to pack it out, i.e. you have to carry it.
Mm-hmm.
well, there were certain things that were mentioned in, like, the previous handbook and field book about possibly, like, carrying out human waste, essentially. Well, now in this current edition of the field book, which I believe is the fourth edition, copyright 2004, they actually have a pretty precise recipe. So they now call it a packet out kit. And what you would need is a 1 gallon, like, plastic bag, like Ziploc bag. You need one paper bag, a fourth of a cup of cat litter, and an 8.5 by 11 inch sheet of typing paper for use as a target. And they actually show an illustration where the 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper actually has the bullseye target thing on it. It goes on to say that how you assemble it so that you carry it with you is, and this is, the, I mean, I'm not joking, this is literally, and this sounds like a joke, and it's going to get worse. So they say that, you know, you put the cat litter in the paper bag, you fold it over, you place that inside the, and you take the paper bag and place it inside the plastic bag, and then you also take the sheet of target paper in the plastic bag and you close it, and then you can make several of those. And it's something like one kit per person per day plus a few extra. Now, here's how you use it. This is where it gets good. So you find your place, and you put the piece of paper on the ground with the target side up, obviously.
Okay.
I think you can see where this is going, guys. You secure the corners with small rocks or stone. And I'm just going to quote from the book, and obviously for anybody who's listening later, I mean this under fair use, which means don't sue me. But it says, take careful aim and accomplish the task at hand. So you're literally shitting on a piece of paper on the ground. Now, then the next thing you do is you essentially carefully take up the target paper with the contents and any toilet paper that might have been used, and you put it inside the paper bag with the cat litter. Then you take that whole thing, you roll it closed, and you put it inside the plastic bag, and then you wash your hands or use hand sanitizer or something like that. And I was just thinking, wow, technically that's an improvised toilet they're talking about. So what you do is you literally shit on a piece of paper, you roll it up, put it inside the paper bag with the cat litter, roll it over, and then put it inside the Ziploc bag, and then you just do that over and over again. It's just like, wow, that's, I remember when I was in the Boy Scouts, besides using, fortifies when they were available, either we would dig latrines. If it was a group of people, or if we were, backpacking and we weren't staying in one place, we would just, dig a cat hole. And they do describe how to dig a cat hole, so they didn't, totally get rid of it. But this is the first time, and they mentioned it before about, you may want to pack it out, but they never told you specifically. Now they're making it, they even have pictures I'm looking at right here, where you are literally shitting on a piece of paper. I'm just like, wow. I know that the VSA's gotten a little bit more, eco-fascist friendly, but I got to say, that's something different.
Can I ask a question here?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to follow along here and actually demonstrate what it is you're talking about. Now, I cramped on a piece of paper. Now, what am I supposed to do with
it? See, that's what I like. Interactivity here, man. We have an interactive broadcast going on. Your wife's not happy with this whole thing, huh? So let me ask you this, man. You're coming from the Boy Scouts. Now, yes, you can speak on this with some authority because you got your little letters from several of the presidents saying congratulations on completing the Eagle Scouts. what do you think about this whole thing? I mean, seriously, are we really getting so lazy we can't dig a hole anymore?
Yeah, it's kind of getting that bad in a lot of ways. But of course, the rationale for using the toilet paper bag cat litter method is because we don't want people crafting in like alpine forests or pristine areas or even some pristine desert areas. I mean, that's the pretext anyway. One other thing I thought was funny, and now they've actually, DSC's also changed their mind on this too, was about pit fires. And this is interesting because we were taught, last decade, we were taught that obviously you need to clear some ground, make sure it's like, what was it, like 6 inches, or excuse me, like 6 feet in, or maybe not 6 feet, but whatever the diameter was, and make sure it's clear of debris, and make sure there's no overhanging branches. Basically, nothing will catch on fire, but it's perfectly fine to do that to have a low-impact campfire. We were taught how to do that. We all did that. Now they're saying no pit fires. This is exactly what they said. Quote, removing sod and digging a hole to contain a blaze is no longer considered an acceptable method for reducing campfire impact. Now, here's the pretext. Even if the pit is carefully refilled, that we always did that, the replaced sod often dies, and the soil beneath it settles, leaving a noticeable scar on the land. Now, that's not entirely true, but anyway.
That's true. I mean, you know, that's how nature replenishes itself in everything. You know, there are forest fires, and then that area that was burned becomes extremely fertile afterwards. Or did we forget about that?
Right, and then they say, instead rely on a fire pan or fire mount for open fires, or use a lightweight camping stove. Here's the thing, there's nothing wrong with using a fire pan, nothing wrong with using a fire mount. Fire mounts are kind of cool to put together. And, you know, stoves are their own thing. But it's like, look where the emphasis is. I was just like, whoa, dude, I'm going to like. And there's also different parts in here where they're mentioning about how, you know, campfires scar the land and all this stuff. I'm like, okay, the planet, for like any geologist or any scientist of any kind that actually studies the planet, was like formed, you know, and sees part of the religious expression, basically formed out of fire and brimstone. Mm-hmm. You know, the Earth is like ridiculously resilient. Now, yeah, you don't want to go abusing it and, like, polluting, you know, putting chemicals in the water or whatever. Wait, that's what the establishment does. But anyway, you don't want to, like, put, you know, bad crap in the water or whatever. But generally speaking, you know, it's not, you know, you're not really increasing your carbon footprint, so to speak, by having a campfire. Now, yeah, there are certain exceptions in, like, some areas, but it's not. See, that's the problem. They overgeneralize in here. So I'm looking at, like, campfires are evil. You know, and now you must shit in a bag. And it's like, whoa, calm down. Earth is okay.
I'll stick with digging a hole, man, away from a water source and away from camp. I'll stick with that. I'll just stick with that.
and then they went in here more about that. One last thing about that. We need to protect the, some of these things and don't disturb anything. And, you know, here's this one, you know, act of Congress of, like, 1966 or whatever it was, that's to protect the archaeological whatever. And I'm thinking, like, okay, I am a free market environmentalist. So, you know, the last entity on the planet anybody should be asking to protect the environment is this thing called the state or government, because they're like the biggest polluters ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, private, non-corporate people actually take care of the land in an environmentally sound way much better than the government can, and a lot of corporations too. So that's like a lot of evidence in history backing that up. Again, guys, don't believe me, go double check. But that's what the historical trend has showed. So I'm looking at this like, no, you need to obey the law, you know, the statutes is what they're referring to. And that's how we're going to say that, you know, your Boy Scouts, you know, I'm thinking like, okay, you know, when I took the Boy Scout oath, you know, on my honor, I'll do my best to do my duty to God and my country. It didn't say the government, it said my country. You know, so I got to say that, you know, in the Boy Scout oath and law, you know, there's nothing about, bending over for the EPA bureaucrats, so I'm not just saying.
Well, so I got a question for you guys. You know, equipment, man. One of the other big reasons I hear that people really don't get out there, besides everything else, man, is that they feel under-equipped or they just don't have any gear and equipment to get out there with. They can't get out there and train effectively. What do you do?
Well, you buy it.
I was going to say improvise, but yeah.
Well, you know, I think too much emphasis is put on equipment that, you know, is uniform to everybody else in the unit. You know, I may feel a lot of place because I go out there and everyone has,
I don't know, LVs, and all I have is a satchel that I carry my gear in. And if less emphasis is put on the uniformity of the equipment and more emphasis is put on the participation level, I think that what you'll get is more people out in the field. You know, everyone can put together some hunting clothes, just standard khaki, pants or whatever to run through the woods. But a lot of groups, I think, will frown upon you if you show up and you're wearing khakis and they're in camo. And, it's that shame factor, I think, comes in that, you don't have hundreds of dollars to buy equipment with, and you might stand out in a crowd. But if the leaders of these groups, put less emphasis on the equipment and more emphasis on, the person who's actually out in the field and their motivation and, their zeal, then you can get over that problem with not having equipment. And equipment comes. I mean, you can buy the stuff, $20 a week, $20 every 2 weeks. Sooner or later, you'll accumulate, an entire field set.
And I guess it comes down to priorities, I mean, if you look online, you can pick up a, really decent owl's pack for about 25 bucks. You can pick up you can pick up your butt pack for, I found them as cheap as $5-$10 online. There's compasses over at Major Surplus now, stainless steel Lenzetic, that are just like our just like the Lenzetics at the military issues. I found them online over at Major Surplus, two of them for, I think it was $12. Now, these are pretty rugged stainless steel ones, so, other Lenzetics I've seen are as much as $99, so, I mean, I guess it just comes to looking around and, trying to find what fits your budget. I mean, hell, I used to have a whole basement full of Molly gear. I had several assault packs down there and stuff like that, but you know what? I can't afford Molly anymore, so I'm going Alice for now. And that's what everybody else around me is using, so that's what I'm going to go with, and it's a whole lot cheaper.
Oh, yeah, those plate carriers are, they're not exactly budget-friendly, let me put it that way. Although, here's the thing, in terms of, improvising equipment, if you're really hard up for, like a day pack or something like that, technically all you need is a pair of blue jeans and some parachute cord. It's, literally, if there's not a lot of room, granted, but all you need to do is, make sure that the button is buttoned, zipper is zipped, take the rope, tie a clothes hitch on one of the cuffs, thread the paracord through the belt loops, and then, you need to size it a little bit, but then tie the other end, tie a clothes hitch on the other end, and then, stow the excess cord and whatnot. And basically, that kind of forms the legs, then kind of form the shoulder straps, in a manner of speaking, and then, of course, the top, where your ass would be, is kind of like the main compartment. And then, of course, the pocket, you can, I don't think they'll fit a water bottle, but you can put other stuff in there. So if you're really hard up, parachute cord and a pair of blue jeans. I've tried it, it works.
I would say, yeah, on the parachute cord. I don't know about the blue jeans. They're kind of hard to move in.
Fair enough.
But yeah, definitely, as both Sleepy and Randy mentioned, I mean, you can get your equipment on a budget. That's without a doubt. The high-end gear, all the CFP backpacks and all that, that may come later on down the road, but, whatever your budget allows, you can find the equipment that fits into that.
eBay.
Yeah, actually, last time I checked, I think eBay was a buyer's market right now. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It's not just eBay. You can find a lot of cool deals. Like, there's a website called DHGate, G-A-T-E, and that's like a Chinese type of eBay store. And I picked up a Magpul UBR stock for my AR. Now, these things run for $275 here in the States. I got mine for $60. I bought it expecting, a Chinese knockoff. The thing arrived, the stamp Magpul, it's completely authentic, and it works. So, you just got to know where to look, to get your deals. But you can find them out there, and You can get some, you know, some crazy deals if you are just a little bit inquisitive as to the best route to go with it. I mean, if you're just going to buy whatever you find at the Army Navy store, you don't pay top dollar. But you know, you do a little bit of research, you can find places to accommodate your budget and get top equipment in the process.
Well, you're right there. Right now, when I came down here, I left Canada in kind of like a 2-hour notice, and I just finished packing up my house. We were getting ready to, me and Nancy were getting ready to move in a couple of days. She got out of town, and I stayed behind to pack up the house and get everything ready to move. And everything I owned was basically boxed up in the kitchen behind all the other boxes. And there was like 300 or 400 boxes in this kitchen. And after what happened, I wasn't sticking around. I ended up leaving everything behind. And, I had some nice Molly gear up there and, some mil-spec Canadian stuff because I was living in Canada. That was my environment, so I had some really cool stuff there. But, when I got back to it, I was worried about grabbing, new gear again, because everything I've always used was Molly and stuff like that, and it's top dollar. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just top dollar stuff, but, I was pricing it out, like Kermit Cross was showing me, I could put together all the gear I need for about $200, minus my weapon and ammo. That's everything, that's my pack, my LDE and everything else, you could put it together for under $200, and... just don't go out to dinner a couple times, and you're almost there.
Randy, there's absolutely nothing wrong with like the Alice gear. Backpacks go, the Alice pack, I think, was the finest military backpack ever created by the U.S. Army.
Well, that was their point as well. This stuff has been tried and tested over decades and decades and decades, and it lasts. It works. I know that I've destroyed. A couple of Molly packs that I had, out in the bush, doing hard stuff with it. And I destroyed a couple of Mollies. They just weren't as rugged as I was hoping they were, but for some dumb reason, I kept going back and buying them, but that's all. So I'm going, I'm going back to Alice. I'm going to Alice now, and I've seen everybody else's gear, man. And they've used it, and it still, takes a lick, and it keeps on ticking. Plus, it's easy on the budget as well, so... for everybody out there, things you can't go because you don't have any gear, my FTX is, man, I show up in whatever I happen to be wearing at the time, I got my BDs and stuff like that, but, I show up, man. It doesn't matter what I have. It's like EQ was saying, I'd rather have somebody who has nothing but has the desire and motivation to learn show up than somebody, who has all the bells and whistles and everything else, and they just really don't show up to do anything. So there's that. Where are we at in our time anyways? Well, look at that, man. Our time has flown. We got 5 minutes, man. Either one of you guys want to close out with anything?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess at some point, food storage is definitely a good thing. If you're traveling out in the backcountry, make sure you use a bear bag, even when there's no bear bags, because, there's like rodents and critters and stuff like that, and,
considering certain experiences I've had in the past, make sure you use a bear bag, guys. Or at least put a wooden chuck container or something. Depending on what part of the country you're in, you really do have to worry about bears. When I was in West Virginia, man, I got stalked by a bear almost a mile. We broke down. The car died on us out in the middle of this mountain road, and I was having to walk back to our place to go get some help, so I can get Sarah and everything. We just brought her back from the hospital. And I got stopped by a bear, out in this community for a good 6 blocks. Bears are no joke. And they do like your food, so that's always a good idea. If you got bears around, you don't want to come in and get some, get something to elevate your food with or get it put up with or something like that. OF, what are you guys doing? What's up with Ohio Frontiersmen? What are you guys got planned here in the next future a little bit? What do you guys, anything interesting to tell us or ways people can get in touch with you?
Actually, over the next couple of weeks, we have things going on with the local group with Orange County, which I'm a member of. I think that we got like 6 weeks till we're going to be doing another FTX. Probably it's going to be a public one because it's success of the first one. Nothing but, you know, building up units wherever we can, getting people motivated and, you know, getting people involved. There are a lot of people that, you know, that are interested in prepping or taking it to the next level from prepping and forming a defensive unit, but they're not willing to commit to, say, joining a formal militia. And, you know, that's actually where the frontiersmen, you know, where we have our strong point. We are militia, obviously. Everyone's militia. But we present ourselves as a defensive force that trains people to, you know, prepare for what's coming, you know, in the world, be it tyranny, hell, an asteroid hit, you know, the New Madrid earthquake erupting, the Yellowstone going off, or any, you know, anything like that. So, you know, we present ourselves as kind of like preppers with attitudes, or kind of like Boy Scouts, you know.
And, attitudes like.
Yeah. And, you know, the difference between us and like a prepper network is the prepper network share information, but they really won't, you know, come together and defend each other. And, you know, that's where we ratchet up a notch. But we always shy away from, you know, presenting ourselves outright as militia. And because we do that, you know, we get a lot of flack from, you know, people in the militia movement saying, oh, well, you know, you should be right out there with the don't tread on me flag, waving it and everything. But the people who are not accustomed to the Patriot movement but are concerned about what's going on in the world, they listen. And when we mention, you know, we're frontiersmen, you know, these people are like, well, what is that? And it starts a dialogue. And after you go through, you know, a few minutes of conversation, they're interested and they want to learn more and get involved. And so, you know, the last few weeks for us have been really, really crazy. We got different groups sprouting up. So, me personally, I'm going to be driving around meeting a bunch of new people, and there's a few other unit representatives that are going to go with me. So we're doing nothing but, you know, beating the drum out there. I don't know if that's exciting to anybody else, but it's exciting to us.
It's exciting to me. You know, anytime that anybody's actually getting out there, getting out their computers and getting out their ass and actually going out and meeting people face-to-face and trying to do something good in the community, that excites me, man. So, you know, kudos to you, and I appreciate your efforts here in Ohio, man.
Thank you. It's not just mine. I mean, I do go by the name Ohio Frontiersman. That's just because it was open and I grabbed it on Facebook. I'm simply a member of the Portage County Frontiersman. Every county is autonomous. We have no state structure. So, you know, I'm no different than the guy who forms a unit in, you know, Adams County. But I did want to say this. I noticed that Dad's in the chat room tonight. And he was at our FTX last weekend. And his wife had a survival bracelet weaving demo. And here's the funny thing. We laughed about this. I mean, in the first time group, we laughed about this, you know, for months, about we really should have a militia weaving party, because so many people ask about how do you make these survival bracelets, and we make them all the time. And his wife was gracious enough to give a demonstration. She brought a bunch of paracord and a bunch of clips and everything else. And she was nervous at first, but, you know, that's, you know, soon went away. And, you know, when she was like, well, you know, we're going to do some bracelets, you know, the guys were like, yeah. But she goes to the table and she sets up and she starts doing these bracelets. She had everyone around that table making bracelets. And I just want to say kudos to her. I mean, that's what I mean about doing other things than just running through the woods and what have you. Yeah, you know, we were making bracelets, and if I told somebody, hey, we're going to do bracelets out in the field, they would have laughed at them. But if you would have saw the level of participation, you would have cracked. I mean, you had all the men in full gear sitting around weaving bracelets, and they were excited to do it because everyone wanted a paracord bracelet.
Well, that is so, I've got one myself. You know, my unit up here, the Devil's Rejects, we got one ourselves. It's a North Black one, and I'll tell you what, man, that thing holds a lot. You know, there's a bunch of paracord in that thing, you know. Really, just take that thing off your wrist and in a bind, you know, and start, you know, pull off several feet of that stuff. So, you know, I want to learn how to make those things. And I sat there and looked at these things and was like, how the hell do they make this?
Oh, it's really simple. And, yeah, like I said, everybody was involved with it. And that's just an example of how you can do other activities while, you know, you're all together other than, you know, the more militaristic things that we do.
Yeah, Randy, the basic Cobra weave is actually really, really easy to learn. There are tutorials up online, but there's also more sophisticated stuff where supposedly some guys can, like, fit, like, 20 feet of paracord on a wrist or something.
Yeah, I've seen those. I, you know, I've got one that's got, like, 10 feet on it. It's a really thin one and stuff. It's got, like, 9, 10 feet on it. You know, it's a small, thinner one. But, you know, I've seen some of the bigger ones. You know, they got 20 feet on those damn things. You know, and that's always nice to have in a bind if you don't, you know, if you find yourself in a bind, 20 feet of paracord is always nice to have on hand. Well, listen, everybody, that's it for tonight. We're at 11:02. I want to thank everybody for listening in. Like I said, this show was kind of impromptu. I really had nothing planned on because of some other stuff I was involved with this week. And but this Tuesday, we're going to have an incredible show. I'm going to have Ohio Frontiersman on with me. We're going to have Colonel Cross on with me. And I'm going to have Dave Hall from OVM on, or OVC on with me. OVM, OVC? Damn, I keep getting those two mixed up. OVM, OVC. OVC. I keep getting OVM and OVC always mixed up with each other. From OVC on.
Ohio Volunteer Corps
on, and I'm actually hoping to get another couple of other people here from Ohio, and I've been talking to them, trying to get them to come on with us, and we're going to have Smiter from the 42nd Alpine on, from Washington State, and joining us also is going to be retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino. Now, the purpose of this one here, this broadcast, I was originally just going to have everybody from, you know, several units from Ohio on here, because this is my backyard, this is where I live, this is where I work, this is where I play. And I wanted to see if, basically, you know, have everybody come together and sit at a round table, if you will, come up with a couple of topics of discussion, things that are important to them, whether they're concerns, solutions, whatever it is, problems we face, whatever it is. And have everybody basically sit down at a round table and see if we can actually find some solutions to these problems and actually get us working towards a common goal. Because just like anywhere else, you know, we've got problems in Ohio with, you know, personality conflicts, or, you know, one group not wanting to talk to another group, and in the end, you know, all that stuff is bullshit. You know, what's important is the security of our free state. That's what's important. Maintaining our republic, maintaining our republic is important. You know, I don't have to like you. I don't have to like anybody to work with them. I'll work with everybody. I don't have to like you. You know, as long as you're willing to, you know, uphold and defend that Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, Constitution, I'm good to go with you. I don't care if I like you or not. So that's basically what I'm trying to do here with this broadcast, is see if we can, you know, maybe get some, you know, ideas going on, you know, how we can actually start working together to present a unified front, you know, and not necessarily, you know, everybody join together in one big happy family, but at least start working together and, you know, actually come up with some solutions to some of these problems we've got here. Because Ohio's no different than anywhere else. You know, we might have a lot of activity going on out here, but we still got our problems as well. And coming on with us is going to be Joseph, you know, retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino, the insurgency expert for the military for a good 20 years. And he's going to be bringing to the table some of his concerns and some of his ideas as well. You know, as well as walking us through and seeing how these ideas match up with what he knows. Like I said, his job was to counter insurgencies for 20 years in the U.S. military, devising the plan for any military engagement that the U.S. was involved in. And he wrote the most incredible book, I think, out, The Resistance to Tyranny, which you can also find for sale. Like I said, up at the top right-hand corner of this website, you'll see a link that says Resistance to Tyranny. Click over there, click the link, and you can get your copy, too. And I also have signed copies available as well. So you can order those now. If you want a signed copy, just email me at randymack@youhavetreadonme, and I'll let you know how to go about getting one of those. And that'll be Tuesday. Then Saturday, Sleepy's going to be back on. Or I'm going to be on Saturday. I lied. I'm going to be on this coming Saturday. I'm taking Sleepy's spot. And Sleepy's, I don't know what I'm doing there yet. I wasn't ready to switch with Sleepy yet, but I'll get something figured out. But Sleepy's going to be doing a broadcast on Sunday and Tuesday. Or is it just Sunday, Sleepy?
Actually, we've kind of figured things out. If you don't mind, we could just do something next Saturday and just keep it simple, just to get how things turned out. So we're going to go for this Saturday and then the next few Saturdays, actually.
All right, so that works. What was that now?
Certain things have changed and whatnot, so it looks like we're good to go for this Saturday as well as for the next few Saturdays as well, if you don't mind.
No,
so, everything turned out well. But yes, folks.
Never mind. I'll be back on Sunday then as usual, and the next Tuesday, and this Tuesday there was going to be an incredible show. So, you know, tune in, listen up, spread the word about it. I'm going to be getting the broadcast put out here tomorrow, and I would love to see a whole bunch of people in there listening, because, you know, the things that we're going to be trying to do here in the state of Ohio, you can imitate in your state as well. Maybe not exactly as we're doing it, because every place is different, every people are different, but take these ideas to the people in your state and see if you can't get something similar going on as well. So with that being said, everybody, I want to thank you for listening in. Be safe, be free. Until Tuesday.
Now the ride of Paul Revere set the nation on its ear, and the shot at Lexington heard round the world. When the British fired in the early dawn, the War of Independence had begun. The die was cast, the rebel flag unfurled, and on to Concord marched the foe. Seized the arsenal there, you know, waking folks and searching all around. Our militia stopped them in their tracks at the old North Bridge. We turned them back, chased those redcoats back to Boston town.
Our shot heard round the world, was the start of the revolution. The Minutemen were ready on the move. Take your powder, take your guns, report to General Washington. Hurry, men, there's not an hour to lose.
Now famous Bunker Hill, though we had loved, it was quite a thrill. The rebel colonel, Prescott Poopsie, was wise. Outnumbered and low on ammunition, as the British stormed his position, he said, hold your fire till you see the whites of their eyes. Though the next few years were rough, General Washington's men seemed they were tough. Those hungry, ragged boys would not be beat. One night they crossed the Delaware, surprised the Hessians in their lair, and at Valley Forge just bundled up their feet.
Now the shot heard round the world, was the start of the revolution. The Minutemen were ready on the move. Take your blankets, take your sons, report to General Washington. We've got our rights and now it's time to prove.
Showed such determination that they won the admiration of countries across the sea like France and Spain, who loaned the colony ships and guns and put the British on the run and the Continental Army on its feet again. Though we lost some battles too, the Americans swore they'd see it through. They kept up raiding parties, hit and run. At Yorktown, the British could not retreat. Bottled up by Washington and the French fleet, Cornwallis surrendered, and finally we had won.
Hooray! And the shot heard round the world, it was the end of the revolution. The Continental rebel took the day. And the father of our country beat the British there at Yorktown. Brought freedom to you and me.